Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio. And for this episode, The Gateway is excited to be talking with Aiden Walker, a meme researcher and content creator. If you like the conversation, please make sure to find more of his work on memes at his Substack blog, How to Do Things with Memes, or on TikTok at Aiden, etc. Both links can be found in the description below. Aiden, welcome to The Gateway. Thanks so much for being here today.
Happy to be here.
This is exciting. I when I found your content and I found your perspective, I was really excited to talk with you. So I want to start this episode like we do all of our other ones and answer the general question of how'd you get to where you are, to have this perspective, to know your expertise, to do what you do.
So I'd describe myself as an internet meme researcher and writer. I've worked for Know Your Meme for 3 years, which sort of began as a freelance gig and kept submitting pieces. They kept liking them and I kept researching memes. I loved doing it. In undergrad, I was very interested. I was an English major, so I loved poetry. I loved art history. And I sort of realized, being very online as well, that all of these ideas and approaches I was learning about could also be applied to internet culture and memes. And once I started doing that, I kind of started with like very early internet stuff. I did research work in like hypertext literature, experimental 90s and 2000s things. And from there, I went to Know Your Meme. And at a certain point, I kind of felt like I wanted to spend more time researching memes and doing kind of more in-depth case studies. So I did a master's in history and literature and kind of tried to treat memes as, you know, a subject you could approach as a historian or a literary critic would. And now I yap about them on TikTok.
That is absolutely awesome. And so here's what I enjoy about what you're doing. You're giving credence or validity to what I think most people just scroll by or completely ignore or are just like, what is this weird thing that some subcultures are elevating in a way? So when you are looking for a meme to look at or to criticize from an academic viewpoint, what are you looking for? What elevates to something of interest to you and what that criteria is?
That's a great question. I think sort of as a rule, anything can be read, you know? So there's some people who are like, oh, I study popular culture. And they're like, you could analyze a season of Desperate Housewives. And like,
right.
You could just apply your brain on and study anything. So I feel, you know, even the most trashiest, uninteresting, you can find something to say about it. Whether it's something worthwhile is another question. But for me, when I look at memes, I'm most drawn to ones that seem to like hook into some discourse that's already happening. So memes where, often memes where people are talking about something political, something personal. I like memes that, the kind which most appeals to me are ones which really use the platform they're on in an interesting way or comment on that. I think a lot of these memes are very meta. So they talk about what it's like to post online, what it's like to live online.
Right.
And the ones that most interest me are the ones that give a record, kind of like anthropologically, I don't know, of like how people feel about being on Twitter 8 hours a day or on TikTok 10 hours a day.
Very similar to the Fireside Poets way back when we were all just collecting our experiences, and this is the medium that they're doing it in. I do want to take a step back. From your perspective, can you define what a meme is? And I know there's a lot of definitions out there, but I know you're looking at things that are on YouTube, you're looking at things that are on Twitter, you're looking at those, and I think my perspective is a meme used to be a still shot with some text on it, and that was a meme. But I think it's morphing and evolving into something larger, but I could be incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive debate in the field of meme studies, I suppose. That is like you're saying, like, so the word comes from Richard Dawkins, and it's this whole metaphor tying biology to human culture. Memes are like genes. So like certain ideas or ways of making, are in competition with others and get selected because they have some kind of fitness. They work for the culture. I think most meme scholars would say Dawkins doesn't really work, in part because he wrote the book in the 70s, and so it's not really describing the internet. And then also, culture isn't biology. Like, of course, it's influenced and there's a lot of similarities, but there's things going on that are tied to power, what people want to do that really aren't there in the ecosystem, as far as I'm aware. And so the definition of meme I'd go for is Lamour Shiffman, I think in 2013, sort of defined them as like a group of digital objects that are unified in content, form, and stance. And that's kind of the standard place people begin. Taking that, content form stance, you could have a group of, still images that are unified in that way, or a group of videos that are unified in that way. And so for me, it's kind of functionally what I look for is that there's usually one thing that remains the same across all the postings of a meme format and one thing that changes. It's like the classic image ones, you have the same picture and then you change the texts. But for like a TikTok trend, it might be you have the same sound, but you change what people are doing.
Or the dance or something like that, but that still even a lot of times has the same sound. So I get where that's coming from. And that's helpful for me because again, I'm seeing that kind of transcending what the traditional meme or the first evolution of memes were. So then I want to kind of focus on what you're doing currently and open up the conversation to, do you have a favorite meme or is there one that's really drawing your attention right now?
My favorite memes are like have you ever seen the Subway sandwich one
Yes.
where it's just the picture of the Subway sandwich and the changing texts all around it? I love memes like that, which sort of on the surface when you first see them make no sense, but then they make sense because you're in the community and you kind of get, oh, this is something that makes no sense, but we're all like beating this dead horse, insisting on it being a joke. And so that one they'll have like there's a lot of like My Brother in Christ variations on that. Like the original one was people go to Subway and they're upset at the sandwich. My brother in Christ, you chose the sandwich. So that kind of message.
I enjoy that. When I look at memes, especially in that one, I hearken back to cultural influencers from people like Monty Python and some of the more alternative influencers in our history that literally had the, if you don't get it, you're not smart enough. Like you're not in the community to get this. And I feel like memes are driving that home, and it's becoming even more specific to subcultures that it allows a sense of community in there. Are you seeing that as well?
100%. And I think that's like there's a lot that's different between memes and older forms of art, but I think that's one thing that's very similar is it allows you to form these in-group communities where we all get this together and there's people outside of the group who don't get it. And on the one hand, that's a little bit of like a snobby elitist, like, oh, my sense of humor is better than yours. On the other hand, it's sort of a positive generative thing that like I'm with people who understand me, who get what I'm or into what I'm into. And so in order to kind of build an online community, you do have to have some people on the outside of it. Just as I think in a lot of these sort of artistic movements where people would get really niche or, really avant-garde, it kind of relied on there being a mainstream that was something really different. And so I think a lot of these niche memes sort of do that same gesture where the fact that a normie wouldn't get it is what makes it so meaningful and constructive for the people who do get it.
I'm sure. I mean, especially within traditional art, the idea of, oh, you don't know the difference between Monet and Monet. You all of a sudden now you're out of it, even though it's an elitist, it's a higher level of appreciation, but it is still an us versus them kind of dynamic there. Memes, I feel have come into a bad rap in the past like 5 years because of that us versus them, and they can go into some more some darker places within that. Is does that make elevating the understanding difficult, or is that still just part of art? Because I think even art does that too. So I'm just interested in your thoughts on that.
It does make it difficult because, just like with people who are really into art or poetry or whatever, people who are really into memes can be annoying. So you kind of have to, and sometimes I worry I'm annoying myself, but I do my best to be accessible and open to the public. But when you're kind of getting into any sort of art, there will be people who want to like gatekeep it, people who, it means a lot to them, and it's very personal to them. Their identity is wrapped up in it. And so, to some extent, that is a challenge to sort of studying and publicizing memes, is that there already is a lot of narrative out there. And a lot of it is narrative written by people who their incentive is not to bring more people in on the joke. It's to kind of keep it in their own thing. Like, I'd say what annoys me most is that there's a certain segment of meme culture that will kind of be like 4chan snobby, be like, all good memes come from 4chan. And first of all, literally not true. But secondly, it's like 4chan meme culture has to be more than 4chan culture, and I think it's often been painted with that brush. And so I'm sort of trying to move it away from that by trying to be a normal, well-adjusted person talking about memes is kind of the goal here.
Well, that's where you're doing the journalism of it, of going into these cultures that a lot of times may be very guarded. I mean, just like someone who embeds behind enemy lines in wartime and gets those stories, you're kind of like, hey, I'm gonna go into 4chan, which is a very unique environment to get
Yeah.
into. So going in there, have you ever come across some of your reporting, let's stick with that metaphor, and some of the environments that are doing it kind of backlash against you?
Not really, I'd say.
Good.
I have gotten like mean comments on posts or whatever, people being like, "Oh, you're wrong," or like, "Oh, you don't get this." Oh, we do know who Wojak is. And it's like, no, you don't know who the artist was, because we've exactly like we can't say for sure who it was, right? But in general, I think when it comes to memes, even kind of the weirdest, sort of meme posters that you wouldn't want to hang out with in real life, they're thankful to see the stuff kind of being respected and studied. And I also probably have not gotten enough exposure to be, have a lot of haters. So thankfully, I haven't been doxxed or anything, but I know people who have been. It is a threat to the
It's an element of it.
Russ, first of all, I want to thank Aiden for joining us. It's super interesting the work that you do, and I'm not memes creator by any mean, but for my classes when I teach like predictive modeling, data analytics, I always look for at least once a week to use them with my student. Like for some reason, and maybe I want to also know what you think about it. Some concepts they tend to click more when I share the memes to my student. I'll give you one simple example is the concept of data cleaning is very, underrated. A lot of people think that they can just get the data and start running some modeling and the cool stuff, right? And nobody want to clean the data. So there is this cool meme where like you see the data and is like a Lego constructions, right? And if you don't clean them well, you're not gonna be able to build a house. Or there is another example where people see the data where you're learning and it looks like a little puppy, and then you go to real life data and it's like a monster, right? So those like I found my student to start getting their attention when it comes to that, showing those memes. What do you think are the elements that make a meme successful? If there are like some that you can extract and say, oh, that's gonna work, and why do you think the young generation are paying more attention where with them compared to like me just testing, hey, this is really important, like come to class and pay attention.
Well, I have to say, I would pay attention in your class, based off of just your presence and obvious knowledge. But I think for memes being successful, a lot of the best ones are metaphors. So like they'll represent something visually that is really memorable. You know, it's easy to think puppy versus monster, and that kind of hooks into your brain and lets you remember it a little better than, you know, the three sentence description that someone would have to give. And so in a way, it's kind of like they're vivid, and so they kind of hook into the brain. And then the other thing is they don't feel formal. It doesn't feel like school. I think memes are, for a lot of people, definitely my age and younger, and also older, I'm sure, sort of very, very intimate and informal in how they get used. You send them to your friends. When you're in the talking phase with someone you're flirting with or going to date, you send memes back and forth. And so seeing it like in a school context, kind of, you know, it feels like someone just saying like, hello, how you doing, speaking your language, being chill, being casual. And so
Somebody
I
they
think,
can relate more.
yeah, it's a bit more relatable. And one of the things that Vars was asking earlier about memes that kind of appeal to me to study, one of the most interesting groups of memes to me are the ones that get used by like AI researchers or like stock market people, because I feel like those are two kind of professional, you know, communities that really communicate through memes with one another, and within one another. And kind of seeing like what formats are they using? What are they trying to express through these memes? Is very interesting to me because it's almost, especially for the finance bros, it's like 50 years ago, you would be reading the Wall Street Journal and like, you know, writing editorials, but now someone's, you know, posting a meme.
Well, and the finance bros have gotten a lot of attention, especially with GameStop and Diamond Hands, all of those things. I mean, they've really dove in, or at least maybe again, it goes back to that alternative element of memes because it's still going against the established finance,
Yeah.
the I guess you could say even the Wall Street Journal finance elements, and now the day traders or the penny traders now coming in and kind of cutting at the foundation of the financial systems, but then also using it through memes to make real world impact
Yeah,
that is changing. It's crazy.
and to communicate pretty complex like things about how the market works.
And being able to kind of have some of that coded language to be able to coordinate too, in a way that you would almost use code or Morse code back in military time. We're now doing that through memes, and not everyone gets that. Do you see, or do you have an idea? And I know I'm gonna push your abilities here. So if it's too difficult, I understand. What do you see going forward? Where do you see kind of that almost 3.0 or 4.0? We might even be at meme 4.0 by now, but that next evolution of memes in here, in the future.
So yeah, that's a tough question. I think 95% of the time when someone predicts the future, it's wrong.
Right, of course. And that's why we want to
Yeah.
put you on record so that we can be like, Aiden, remember when you were so wrong?
The three trends I'm seeing, I guess I was actually just thinking about this yesterday, is so memes are really records in a way of technology people are using to get on the internet and of social media platforms, in addition to being art things that I want to dig into and I think are beautiful or whatever. They're also just documents that tell us, you know, how are people, you know, posting differently now that it's phones instead of desktop computers? How will they post differently when it's, you know, metaverse headsets instead of phones? How are people posting differently now that we have these platforms with really powerful algorithms versus a few years ago when the algorithms were maybe less, I don't know all the science of it, but a bit less sophisticated or intelligent. And so I think through memes, you can kind of read those changes. And so for me, the way to think about the future of memes is kind of like, what's the future of hardware that people are using to post from? Sort of just consumer tech. And then kind of what's the future of platforms? And on the future of hardware, I think definitely like spatial computing. There could be memes that are now kind of even more dance oriented or more kind of gestural or 3D. And then in terms of the platforms, my bet for the future of platforms would be stuff like Roblox or Fortnite, where the platform is kind of a game. rather than sort of the Instagram or Twitter model where it's other people writing or posting. I think
Okay.
things would be inside of a literal game. Like that's what Gen Alpha is doing. So I think, and like Roblox, there's games within Roblox that get built into it. IKEA just opened up a
Right.
store where they're paying people to work in it in the game. So I sort of see us switching to those.
So
And then
then
I think
almost the
AI is just.
environment is the meme as well, or yeah,
Yeah.
that gets like meta's meta of memes. Like now I'm my head
Yeah.
does some type of a backflip there because it gets confusing, but that's where it's going.
I think it's going into, I mean, gaming has always been really big for meme culture, but I think stuff like Roblox, Minecraft, Fortnite, those people like play them, but people also just hang out in those on those
Yeah.
maps.
So with algorithms and these large language models coming through, are you seeing AI generated memes as well? And are they as terrible as that sentence sounds? Because again, that it takes I would say it takes some human, I don't know, wisdom or witty ability to make a meme, or because some memes are not witty at all, are just like very dry, and
Yeah.
that's what works about them, where almost the AI kind of does it, like smort, you know, SMORT, like oh smart, like that's kind of the thing of like technology doesn't know how to do this, but it did it, so we're kind of having fun with it.
I think so. There are like AI meme generators out there that will do, you know, caption, image, whatever. And I think it's a similar situation as like AI art or AI writing that, I saw a tweet from a professor that was like, her AI policy was you can use ChatGPT to write your essay, but it's going to give you C level work or D level work, which I think that's.
Biagio, we need to do that. That's what I'm gonna steal that line. That's perfect. You're not gonna do a great job in this class if you do
Yeah.
it.
Like, if that's okay for you to get C level, like it'll have nice grammar, but it won't have anything, whatever. It'll, you know. And so I think AI memes are kind of like that. But what really interests me are people who take like an AI generated image or, you know, make an AI generated song and use these new really publicly available tools like ChatGPT or Midjourney or like 11 Labs, and they make new meme formats out of it. So like if you saw the AI president's gaming meme,
Yes,
like
yes.
that kind of stuff, like AI generators as a tool for memes, I think is going to get used more and more because they're really powerful, they're really accessible, and they're really funny. And
Yeah.
that's a very interesting.
The difficult part about that specific meme is I was more invested and connected to those political figures because of that meme, and I had to continue to remind myself that that's not that. Like they are not doing this. This is all artificial, but it humanized them from being, you know, President Obama, President Biden, President Trump, any of these high level, very powerful, very influential people. And we literally, as a society, hold them on a pedestal, rightfully so. I mean, they have very important decisions to do, but having them just kind of be like, oh, we're hanging out, it made me feel almost more empathetic for all of them, regardless of political spectrum. And I had to kind of have a moment with myself to be like, that's not real.
Like honestly, so there is an AI generated meme that was a cover of Boy's a Liar, the Ice Spice song, but rapped by Obama and Biden.
Okay.
And I have that on my running playlist now because I found it on Spotify. And I honestly prefer it to the Ice Spice original. And like the Biden verse, like goes very hard. Like I feel like he would his voice, even more than Obama's in a way, like. And think and like knowing, like thinking of Joe Biden all the time, he's in the news, whatever, he's the president. And then I go on a run and I hear him be like, Sleepy Joe on the mic. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, so these memes totally are able to kind of change the way we view them. And those AI presidents gaming memes, like the English history major brain in me, the meme analysis brain is like, there's sort of a fantasy there. Of like, what if these guys were approachable? What if, you know, this 81-year-old man did speak the language of like an 18-year-old on TikTok, which he doesn't. And then also this fantasy of Republicans and Democrats gaming together.
Right.
And so
How
you can kind of
quickly.
just throw those
Well,
readings onto it, you know?
yeah, and Aiden, I got goosebumps when you said that, because it's a real thing. Like I game with people that have completely different experiences and backgrounds with me, and we are at friends. Like, some of my better friends I've never met in person because we just connected through this video game, and I'm not sure if we would have developed the friendship we did if we didn't have that video game, if we met in person. Like, I wouldn't pick that person as someone who I would go hang out with because of some of those different beliefs and different backgrounds, just like the presidents. But that's really kind of cool within technology, and I'm feeling like memes are also starting to bridge those gaps.
Yeah. And bringing different cultures together, even as they kind of allow you to make your own in-group and out-group, like I was saying, in a way, it's a meme is a lot more accessible, you know, that I can see a meme I don't understand at all. A few Google searches later, you know, a few minutes later, I get it, I'm in the group. But I think in the past, with like really edgy or, you know, hipster art, or like, I think like I wasn't around in the 90s or 80s or whatever, but like you get some cool new band and it's like it's on like a cassette player or something, right? You
Right,
can't just
right.
go and stream it.
Yeah. And it was definitely a time when you really, at least in the 90s, there was the mainstream music and there wasn't. And you could download it and you could access it. And there wasn't SoundCloud and there wasn't all of these platforms where you can access a lot of people's stuff. It was, no, I found this one download somewhere or this one CD that someone had, and you knew that. And there was a way deeper connection specifically to music than what it is. But TikTok is doing that. Like, people are getting connected to a specific song and they're having real long-term memories around those songs because they're such a part of that culture now. But I'm not sure it's leading to the artists, which falls back into the memes, that I don't think people are going and saying, oh, I want to own this art. Banksy, I think, would be the most meme-oriented artist that is commercially successful. But I don't know if someone who created, a very specific meme, or even Pepe, is getting money off of that. It's just been reiterated so many times, and now it's everyone's, that it's almost an open source form of art that no one can make money off of.
Yeah, that's one of the big, in a way, it's it feels people want, I think one of the reasons a lot of people like memes is that it doesn't feel like it could ever sell out because there's no money in it. But another that also leads to this thing where you have people who are making really good, impactful, interesting work and they're not getting any compensation. So it's kind of this issue, I think, at the heart of it too, and then copyright. Like I
Oh,
knew a
man.
guy who a professor who was writing a book and he wanted to use an image of the that famous like German romanticist painting where it's the guy like on the cliff ledge looking over the mountains. And that was a meme format. There's a lot of different memes
Right.
of it. And he wanted to reprint one of them in his book and they couldn't like clear it. Cause like how do you cite a meme? How do you copyright it? How do you
Oh,
make sure it
wow.
can be? And that's the thing that the entire meme culture rests on is that you can just copy and paste anything, you know, but
Right, that there's no owner of it, but then you're like, oh, but someone somewhere might sometime try to sue over it, and you don't want to be the one person that now owes $10 million to some
yeah.
kid who created this meme. And yeah, but then it almost, we cycle through again, where all of these artists from our past that we literally idolize as Western culture, Picasso, that died poor and unknown, and now their art is some of the most respected and valuable in culture. Like, that could be what memes end up being, is this meme creator who just posted online and 4chan and 8chan and the trans, all of those things, are now idolized, and we do
someone like yourself, Aiden, does a lot of research and figures out exactly who it is, and then they get, you know, kind of the prestige they maybe deserve.
I think, yeah, in general, like online culture is in its like starving artist blue period era, I guess maybe. Like it's kind of not yet that recognized. Like it's sort of starting to begin to be recognized. I think people are now. Like the New Yorker just did I was just reading this editorial about all the Kamala Harris memes, and I was like, wow, this wouldn't have been published like 5, 10 years ago. It wouldn't have been serious enough for the New Yorker to kind of write. It was still kind of a jokey article, of course, but like I'm sort of seeing people start to take it more seriously. And I think whatever prestige is worth, you know, social capital, whatever, it is starting to be assigned to memes. And so I think like part of the formula and what I really am trying to do maybe in like my more grandiose moments when I yap about memes on TikTok or write about them is trying to be one of those like critics or people who's out there, you know, honoring the artists and kind of being like, hey, pay attention to this. You know, I'm going to take it very seriously. And I think you kind of have to show the example of like, yeah, there is a there, sort of what I hope I'm able to prove through my content.
Yeah,
Aiden.
I like the term blue, you know, blue period for memes. That's a very cool thing, and I think that's your first book, like truly, like that's what it is. If I could just put that out there. Biagio, go ahead. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, I was like I had a question like around what you guys were discussing copyright, and I was just curious if there are any memes creator that actually like to claim their work. Like I generally seen some of those memes like in almost every presentation while attending college or going around. Like some of those popular ones are literally broadcasting all over the world. Are there any creators that actually like to claim I was the one creating this one, or I don't know, it's not part of the culture.
So that there
Just put
are,
it out
yeah.
there. Okay.
Yeah, so I'd say that there are, and it kind of gets into the question of, you know, who is the creator of the meme? You know, is it whoever made the original piece of media, or is it the person who's thrown the caption on it? So sort of around the realm of the people who throw the caption on it. Instagram meme accounts especially like to watermark their work, and so it'll have the little tag of whatever account made the meme. And often that'll kind of stay there on the image and spread around. But I think in general, there's sort of this sense of you can repost someone else's meme as long as you credit them and, you know, put their handle in the caption or something so it leads back. But then in terms of people who have made art that's then been turned into memes, probably the most famous case is Matt Fury, who did the Pepe comic. And the original Pepe comic, he was a web artist. It had nothing to do really with any of the stuff that Pepe now is related to. So this poor guy, I don't know what year it was, maybe like 2010, he draws this cartoon frog that's like a very objectively good drawing of a cartoon frog. And then as the years go on, it kind of gets claimed. And there's been so many times where he's kind of posted trying to be like, hey guys, you know, chill out, you know, I am not into this alt-right stuff. But the meme kind of took on a life of its own. And now his name is always going to be associated with that, even though he just drew a frog. And so I think like there are cases like that where people, especially web comics artists, I think, who get their work turned into memes, often sort of see it, you know, snowball away into something that they don't recognize. And I think Matt Fury probably has gotten some money for different Pepe merch or stuff, I hope. But it is this sort of thing. That's kind of one of the dark sides of it, is like once it's out there online, people are gonna, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, there are
Well,
some of those that like you have the image and then everybody kind of customize the what they are talking about in the caption because they can use it in different area and fields and to make it relevant. And I agree with you also when you were talking about AI, how by creating images now you can just focus more on what you had to say, adding on the image to make it work, to make it relevant. So it definitely wanna incentivize and make it easier for people to create memes. And I might have to do something because I'm running out of them for my classes. So I have to create some for my students. Sorry, Ross, I cut you off.
no. I was just gonna say, along with like Pepe, the one that I think of even before that is the President Obama Hope like that was a
Yeah.
photographer. He took that picture of President Obama, and that artist grabbed that one off of there. And there was a court case. That was a really interesting version of saying, no, there was an actual photographer who took an actual picture, and that was then just basically scraped off of Google and turned into one of the most iconic versions of a president's portrait ever and used in a campaign. And that artist was getting highlighted for it, but not the photographer. And that's there. So then Pepe is kind of that next version of that. And so that photographer sitting there saying, kind of similar to Pepe, like, whoa, I was just doing my job. I didn't expect it to be that way. And now I think most of culture would say having your picture turned into hope in President Obama's campaign isn't a negative, but it might not have been the intended one. Where then Pepe, again, I think most culture would say, hey, that turned into maybe some things that most people are like, that's definitely not what I wanted my art associated with. Which then goes back to like what we see with like music and different campaigns using songs without having that. We keep kind of creating these new versions of the same things that's why people are scared of copyright, you know?
Yeah. And memes are, to me, sort of a very interesting object to think with here, because on the one side, you do want to compensate and honor, original artists. But in another way, like art and culture have always worked by people copying each other, borrowing from each other, remixing one another. I mean, like hip hop, like those guys didn't make those drum breaks, and in a way,
You're
that's
right.
remix culture. Or like, you think about like different folklore traditions. It's all about, you take this story, you tell your own version of it. And the example I always think of is like from around the time of Shakespeare, Christopher Marlowe. I always want to say Philip Marlowe, Christopher Marlowe, wrote this poem called like The Passionate Shepherd to His Love, and it goes, come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove, et cetera, et cetera. But then every other poet of the era pretty much, took this rhyme scheme, this metrical structure, these first few lines, and riffed on it and did their own version. And this would happen all the time in that era. People would, pretty much create these poem formats and then fill them in their own way. And so now, like, when you get the poetry anthology and you open the book and it says, here's a poem by Marlowe, here's a poem by John Donne, or even here's a play by Shakespeare. Like the way those guys were actually writing those was like they were just, borrowing from other stuff that had been written. It was all, total chaos. Like Shakespeare, Hamnet was like a tragedy that existed already. Romeo and Juliet was taken from an Italian novel. Like it's all this, amorphous authorship. And so it's kind of this thing we invented, being like just one person wrote that. In a way, it never works that way because every novelist has an editor, has, friends they talk to, has peers they.
You
But at the
know,
same time, you have to create that myth to compensate people and value them and honor them.
yeah, the capitalistic side of it, that's where that's all come from. Because before it was just the shared word, the shared language, the shared experiences. But I never really even thought of how like the form could be like now. A lot of times we say, well, I invented that form, so even if you change the words, it's still mine. Like a sonnet, like, oh, that's everyone writes sonnets all the time, and no one would think of saying, oh, well, we have to credit the creator of the sonnet form for that one. But we're kind of trying to do it, and I think memes are going against that. Like, there's so many forms that you can't own.
Yeah. I mean, it's also on the other side, it still is true that like a sonnet that Shakespeare writes will probably be better than one you and I write. And so, like, respect to the goat for that, but in a way, the form is also like, in a way, we kind of put the author before the form, I think, in a lot of ways. But really, the form is where a lot of that creativity is coming from, this sort of collective.
Well, and going back to hip hop of saying, well, we give credit to the people that created some of that stuff, maybe not always to the detail of who did the beats, who did those rhythms, but then also we now respect who did it the best. Like, great, yes, we'll harken back to the people that started creating this in Brooklyn, in New York, but also there's some people that now do it, and it doesn't matter where they're coming from, they're doing it way better than we
Yeah.
could ever have thought of, and they're the goats like you referenced. My next question, and I know we're coming into this, but I know there are a lot of parents out there that are dealing with middle school and young high schoolers that are having to try and grapple with this term skibidi and skibidi toilet and anything there. And I just, as a PSA for everyone, I want to direct all of you to Aiden's wonderful critical analysis of skibidi toilet. Can you give just a very quick overview of it and like where to find this stuff? Because I think a lot of people similar to hip hop, or like, and when Eminem was dropping stuff, it would feel like, what is going on here? What are my children doing? And I have no reference to it whatsoever. Can you at least let everyone know that it's not necessarily something that is, I don't know, Satan oriented? I don't know. I'm trying to think of the worst things that we can all be afraid of. Just help. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so Skibidi Toilet, I'm doing a review series on my TikTok, breaking down each season of it. It's probably like the most popular thing on YouTube, kind of rivaling MrBeast even, billions of views. It started like a year or so ago, and it's a animated series made using assets from like Half-Life 2, which is sort of a big tradition on YouTube, people using SFM is the software. And it's a war series between these toilets that have a human head popping out of them and they sing a really annoying song. And then these cyborgs that sort of have human bodies and wear suits but have like surveillance cameras for heads. The camera head people are then joined by like people who have speakers for heads and TVs for heads later on. But it's just this, brutal war. The violence is kind of like Marvel movie almost. It's all animated. And I, was noticing that it's one of the biggest things on the internet for some reason. And I kind of wanted to find out why. So I started this review series, and all the kids are watching it. And part of it is, it's like toilets, LOL funny, kids love potty humor. But what I sort of felt was that it's this series depicting a brutal war that is morally ambiguous. Like, it's not clear which side is the good guys, whether it's the toilet people, the skibidi toilets, or the camera head people. And then the entire thing is filmed from you're one of the camera heads. And so every piece of footage is you see the hands below doing stuff, and you zoom, you pan around, and it's all, first person. And I was really interested in that. And I think part of what compels kids into it so much is that, like, when you think about it, it really does deal with these big themes of war, and kids like know there's conflict going on in the world. They're aware of the vibes, even if we as responsible adults kind of want to keep them safe from it. And I think kids are also like the average like 10-year-old is much more sophisticated with internet culture than I think they get credit for, right? And so I think just the way it's filmed, which kind of calls back to this whole tradition of source filmmaker made YouTube videos, but also like what it's kind of like to play a first person shooter video game, and then what it's like to kind of watch through somebody else, which is what Skibidi Toilet asks you to do, and what I think a lot of internet content asks you to do. I think the fact that Skibidi Toilet is examining those themes is part of its big appeal. And so I honestly consider Skibidi Toilet, like the fact that it's so popular, is a victory for the culture, because the kids could be watching something much more brainless. Sure, it's violent, and there are definitely kids who have gotten nightmares from watching it. It's not the best for every child. But, if the kid is on the internet watching YouTube Shorts, which is where you'd go to watch Skibidi Toilet, they could be seeing something much more, scarring. And when I was a child, Gen Z, definitely, we were seeing things that were not meant for children.
Okay. Thank you for that reference, and truly to all of our listeners, check out Aiden stuff. We are going to put all of your socials on in the description below, so follow Aiden stuff. It's worth the time, and Aiden, I think you do a great job of being succinct and giving a really strong foundation for what's going on with it, while also still respecting it and seeing that it's gonna be something much more, and it's connecting with the culture just like art in a way that it's something underneath there that these kids, this next generation, is really really seeing. So I think the work you're doing is very important. And truly, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. And I think we're going to have you back because, next week it'll be something different and we're all going to be like, what the hell is going on? And Aiden, please help us.
Happy to be back. I've enjoyed chatting with you guys.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please, remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.